Good evening. Welcome to the program. Glad you are with us. We're joined tonight by Terry Turchi, former FBI agent. He was the assistant deputy director of the counterterrorism division of the FBI. He's going to talk about the latest revelations of a top-ranking FBI agent investigating Trump for Russia collusion, apparently involved in Russian collusion. We'll also talk about Christopher Wray going over to the World Economic Forum and bragging that indeed the FBI does work with big tech to censor Americans. We'll also hear tonight from David Zhang, who is an expert on China. He brings us a report tonight as well. First up is Rebecca Walzer. Rebecca, well, she's an expert on economics and someone we like having on because, well, we can talk about so many things with her. And folks, put on your seatbelt because we may be headed for a major dollar crisis sooner rather than later. We have been warning about the death of the dollar for a long time because of the, well, the economic war that's going on to destroy the petrodollar, the U.S. dollar, as the world reserve currency, the petrodollar, coming about through Richard Nixon when he closed the gold window and then cut a deal with Saudi Arabia to trade oil on the world market backed by oil, dependent by the dollar. That meant other countries had to hold the dollar, thereby backing it by the commodity of black gold, oil, if you will. And of course, the BRICS banking system that I've been warning about since 2010, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, they are now asking Argentina to join them and perhaps Saudi Arabia. We'll see who else gets in on it. Maybe even Iran. I wouldn't doubt if you don't even see Israel join. What if Israel is asked to join by Saudi Arabia? Benjamin Netanyahu desperately wants a peace deal with Saudi Arabia. He said that could open up peace with other nations, Arab nations, beyond imagination. Maybe Saudi Arabia says, okay, fine, join us in the BRICS banking system or start trading and buying oil based on this currency. A lot going on, but Saudi Arabia pretty much just announced they're open to dumping the U.S. dollar as the world reserve currency or the petrodollar. That means and could mean a crash of the dollars you now hold. We'll talk to Rebecca about that right now. Rebecca, welcome back to the broadcast. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Brandon.
So you want to comment on my opening little monologue there?
Dead on. I mean, I felt like I was saying it myself. You are absolutely hitting the nail on the head. This is exactly what we're talking about, that dollar hegemony is basically dead. It really ended last year when Russia got kicked out of the SWIFT system and no longer accepted the dollar to sell their crude and natural gas last year. Obviously, they said only Russian rubles or gold. And so it really ended technically last year. However, we haven't had the OPEC, you know, nations, the 13 OPEC nations that are really make up the block that gives us the strength of the petrodollar, do anything at all yet as towards the dollar. But we've seen these incremental steps. And it started last April with Saudi Arabia obviously announcing their security alignment with Russia away from the United States, which really was our payment for their agreement to keep oil sales of OPEC nations in the dollar. So that was the first sort of tear in that wall. And then we saw last year, at the end of last year in Q4, they announced that China was their number one economic partner. So once we got that pronouncement from the crown, we knew, okay, this is really moving forward. Now, and the other thing that happened was in October and November, Saudi Arabia participated in a two-week economic exercise with South Africa. And South Africa came out after that and announced that Saudi Arabia was in fact joining the BRICS nations. Now, we didn't get that pronouncement from Saudi Arabia, but we did get that from South Africa. And of course, this was at the end of their joint two-week economic exercise. So then we had them come out last week, Saudi Arabia specifically, and announce that they were open to trading crude and natural gas for the first time since 1974, since our petrodollar deal went into effect with them, in outside the U.S. dollar. And they specifically mentioned three currencies. They mentioned their domestic currency, the Saudi Arabian rial, the euro, and the dollar. But the interesting thing is that really all of their informal communications were really indicating that they were very much interested in beginning to trade in the Chinese yuan. And that's where we really see the BRICS interplay and the number one economic alignment that they announced last year was China coming into play. So what they've done is they've laid out a map for the world, Brandon, that this is what is going to happen, but it just hasn't actually been executed as yet.
So how soon do you think this could begin to affect us economically here in America?
Well, I think that if the U.S. media, if the Western media, if the Financial Times of London, if other Western media started to actually put the pieces together for their, you know, readerships to under for Western nations to begin to understand the imminent demise of the U.S. dollar. And we have to keep in mind here the time frame that this is lining up to. You know, you could see an imminent collapse of the U.S. dollar once the world realizes that they will no longer be backed by black, as you called it, black gold oil. As soon as the world realizes that, you could start to see a dollar collapse. And that could occur, and you know if that begins, that could be a snowball that is unstoppable. So that's the really, I mean, it's almost terrifying economically to think of, and I'm not trying to be hyperbolic, but this is what we have finally come to after all of these years on a fiat system with, since 1944, Bretton Woods, New Hampshire, the US dollar being the global reserve currency, and us not having the financial and monetary discipline to not overspend. You will get to a point, and I use the movie on the Titanic as an example. That's a perfect analogy because there's you're seeing the underneath, you're seeing the rudder going constantly, and it looks like it's unstoppable. It's moving so fast until it just abruptly stops. It just comes to a dead stop, just like that. And that's what we're talking about here. This timing, Brennan, lines up, if you think about it, a potential dollar collapse could line up with a launch of a central bank digital currency, as we've been discussing, the digital dollar being ready to launch on the FedNow platform between May and July of this year. It will be operational, beta testing now with MasterCard and 12 other banks. So we understand the lining up of all these things. And it is alarming. It is quite scary. And I think that we have been overplayed, outplayed. We thought that we were quite arrogant and thought that the dollar would always be the number one position. And that was really arrogant. Look at Rome. Look at all the implosions. We've had the Turkish Empire, the British Empire, the Ottoman Empire. We've had so many different time periods of ruling of a certain nation that have come and gone. And so we should have known better than to implode and financially upon ourselves with all of this debt and all of this tax and the retirement of the baby boomers upon us. And it's after coronavirus and printing $10 trillion in such a short order, this is where we're at. We are, the dollar could potentially implode.
Wow. And we're going to talk a little bit about what people can do to get ready for that. But I do believe you're right about this, you know, FedNow, that on their own website, the federal government saying we're ready to launch this thing between May and July of this year. How accurate do you think they are at meeting that deadline?
You know, I think that they can do things very quickly. It's really just an interplay of actual transactions and volume of transactions and accuracy and speed. And so, you know, these things are all not based, they're not brand new systems that are built. They're always taking existing code that has already been used by merchant card processors. This is why MasterCard is involved in the beta test. They're always taking existing systems and modifying them. And so this is what we have, some kind of variant version of the Swiss system on more of a blockchain, because that's what we're talking about here. You know, we're talking about blockchain technology. So we're talking about a private system that has already used and gleaned mountains of code from existing payment processing systems, but into a blockchain crypto world.
Because I hear some people say, oh, they're not ready, they're not ready. Of course, the government is notorious for not meeting deadlines. So I was just curious as to your thoughts, if you think they could actually do this year.
But yeah, I absolutely think they could. I think that they've been working on this a lot longer than we think they have been.
I think they absolutely have as well. I absolutely think they have as well. Let me ask you, how will this unfold? How will the average American see this unfold? Did you get a chance, by the way, to see the FDIC's meetings back in November of last year? And I have a couple of clips I can play, but one of them, they said, hopefully this happens on a Friday. Hopefully this happens on a Friday. Did you hear that?
Oh, absolutely.
Article two, which is the Fed rushing in, the FDIC rushing in and dealing with a bank that's collapsing and gone bankrupt. And if they have to enact Article two, they hope it happens on a Friday.
Yeah, it's quite sad. You know, obviously that specific meeting, they were talking about the possibility of bail-ins and people not understanding what a bail-in is. You know, we're used to the Federal Reserve bailing us out. Right. So bailing us out is us borrowing money from the Federal Reserve with interest and them stimulating that money back into the monetary system. And that's how we've been bailed out. A bail-in, obviously, is a liquidity crisis. You know, basically, it's all accounts are frozen and you have to set up arrangements with your bank on a specified date and time. You're calling an 800 number. I don't know how long you're staying on the phone. You're waiting for an appointment time 2 weeks out, and you're getting a maybe $5,000 maximum withdrawal ability, and that's it.
So $5,000, $5,000 maximum withdrawal in a two-week period.
Well, don't quote me on this, Brendan. I'm just giving you an example
right,
of how
right,
it could
right,
work.
There's
not been anything published by the FDIC about how a bail-in would run, but I'm giving you kind of just an overview of how it could go. And I'm not saying that it would take 2 weeks for you to get your money. I'm saying it would take you 2 weeks to get the appointment to be able to go in, because you have to understand this is going to be a freezing of all activity.
Jim Rickards, excuse me for interrupting, Jim Rickards calls it an ICE 9 scenario,
exactly.
Where
right.
Everything is frozen. And your credit cards, your debit card, everything must be frozen.
That's exactly
because
right.
They have no basis by which to engage in transactions because the whole system is collapsing and they have to freeze it to stop runs on banks, people swiping cards to try to get
stock
money
market,
really fast. They don't even
banks,
know. They also don't
everything.
Know how to measure a transaction because it's going to have to be recalibrated. So they have to stop everything while they figure
That's
this
right.
out, right?
That is exactly right. That if you're going to have a shift from one system to another, there's never a time to freeze everything. There's never a time for a cutoff. But there must be a shifting from one system to the other. That must occur. You can't have them run two parallel systems. We have to end transactions on one system, and we have to begin transactions on another system. So it's just no one is suggesting that there's this absolute plan to go ahead. In fact, I think this plan is going to get highly interrupted. Believe me when I tell you, this is not how it's going to go, but this is how the central bankers believe that it would go, that they would be able to have some sort of economic black swan event that would cripple everything, whether it be a cyber attack blackout, like the pre-example we had with the FAA going down on January the 11th.
Thank you. Thank you.
Whatever emanates is going to be some sort of event that will emanate a crisis, whether it be a stock market one day collapse that freezes everything. Whatever the case, it seems to me more like we're looking at some kind of blackout cyber event. Personally, that's how I've read the World Economic Forum's, you know, events predating what actually then happens. And then it's just so coincidental that they had that event 202 last year, and we got the FAA shut down, and it also happened in Canada. We've seen other countries have this already now. So it's already looking to me like this is the cyber event that the WEF just warned us of last week as the number one thing that will happen in the next 2 years that will make COVID look like nothing.
Well, you and I don't rehearse what we're going to talk about here, but I actually have this queued up, ready to play. Here is Klaus Schwab from back in, I think, 2020. Listen to what Klaus Schwab had to say. And these guys, folks, remember, they love to tell us what's coming. I think it's part of their little game or a little occultic religious system they're a part of, where they got to kind of warn you in advance. But listen to what Klaus Schwab had to say. Then we'll talk about the FAA going down, the glitch in trading today, the attacks we've seen on the East Coast and the West Coast in power substations, the money that's been missing from Bank of America accounts, according to numerous news reports. Is this all testing to see how the public will respond? Watch what Klaus Schwab has to say.
We all know, but still pay insufficient attention to the frightening scenario of a comprehensive cyber attack, which would bring to a complete halt to the power supply, transportation, hospital services, our society as a whole. The COVID-19 crisis would be seen in this respect as a small disturbance in comparison to a major cyber attack. To use the COVID-19 crisis as a timely opportunity to reflect on the lessons the cybersecurity community can draw and improve our preparedness for a potential cyber pandemic.
Cyber pandemic, Rebecca.
Yeah. Yeah. The scary thing is that was in 2020 and the model just happened at the end of 2022. So it's really, you know, and then of course in Davos last week, their focus really was on what could go wrong in some kind of massive cyber event. That was really the focus of the conference, and how do we bring it back to globalization against fragmentation, which was the whole theme of the conference. So, you know, you have to have some sort of cataclysmic event that will occur that will spur either all systems being shut down or some kind of everything is in place and held. And then you'll see what we call the bail-in be executed, which means no access to funds. And I've heard different things. You know, this is getting into the realm of a lot of different things that we really haven't ever covered, you know, together before. But any kind of continuity of government kinds of types of things, if this kind of thing were to happen, would be going into effect, and all of the things that
entails. In other words, are you saying that if we have a collapse of the U.S. dollar, a collapse of our banking system, that the contingency of government's plans kick in, and we basically go into a state of martial law for a period of time?
I mean, that would be the civilians' version of expectation.
Can you imagine the pandemonium in our streets? I mean, the people who are always looking for some reason to riot, some folks are anyway, right? I mean, they get mad over some football team losing a game and start overturning cars and lighting cars on fire. So, I mean, can you imagine if their cards aren't working? They can't get cash out of the ATM. If they're
out of food, they can't feed their children. Yes. I mean, it becomes life and death very quickly.
Yes, very quickly.
If you don't have a functioning society, especially in urban areas where people, you know, really buy their food on a daily basis because they have such access to cafes and, you know, sideway grocery stores and fruit stands.
The average grocery store only has about 3 days worth of food,
right?
You know, in the store, and they got to keep being replenished. Let me play. I've played it for this audience, and I don't think we can play it too much, so that people realize this is what the FDIC is really talking about. But I have not been able to play it with you here. I'd like for you to respond. Here's from this meeting back in November of 2022. The FDIC openly saying a bailout is coming. Bailout, not bail-ins. Excuse me. Bail-ins, not bailouts. Bail-ins. Bail-ins are coming. And runs on the bank. Listen very. It goes fast. So listen carefully, folks.
2020. For example, and see whether people understood what might happen.
Let me back it up.
I wondered whether there are some market tests of whether you're being heard. And I think about TLAC. So TLAC should respond to good and bad news about the institutions. And it's really important. I mean, it's a little bit conflicted, right? I mean, it's important that people understand they can be bailed in, but you don't want a huge run on the institution. But they have, I mean, they're going to be.
They're going to be.
Yes. So what he just explained, and this is what people don't understand, what he just explained is that people don't understand they're subject to a bail-in. Now, let me explain what that means. And the terms of everyone's client or customer agreement with their bank, there is a liquidity restriction provision that allows the bank to withhold your funds for days, even up to 30 days. If they make a determination to close your account, they have up to 30 days to close it and send you whatever balance that is then due or that could possibly be in the account. So people do not know that their accounts in the entire United States are subject to these liquidity provisions and that the bank can decide for any reason to freeze the account potentially cash you out as a customer, so you no longer have access to anything for at least 30 days, and you're frozen. And that is a part of your standard banking contract. We've really seen a lot of banking contracts that terms that are that have made mainstream news that we've never known before, when we've seen all of these banks cancel, you know, celebrities that are coming out on conservative viewpoints, like Kanye West getting canceled completely by one of the largest banks, if not the largest bank in
Mike
the entire
Lindell.
Country.
Mike Lindell getting his bank canceled.
All kinds of examples where they're using terminology that if they don't agree with certain things that you do publicly, that they have the ability to cancel your account. So these things are all in these terms of agreement that we all sign up when we open accounts or we ask for services, especially when we're giving something as private as our banking information with social security numbers and birth dates and addresses, and we give all of that information so that we can run our financial transactions. They have a very trusting position, and we need to all understand the terms of our banking. And what he said that people didn't pick up is, if people knew this, there would be a run on the bank because people would go get their money out before they could then bail it in, keep it lock it down under the terms of the agreements.
Wow. And you know, one of them goes on to say, I don't know if I have that clip or not. I think, let's see if I have it. Because maybe this is it right here. Let's see if this is it. Play, give me the audio, guys.
I completely agree with that. I almost think you'd scare the public if you put this out. Like, why are they telling me this? Should I be concerned about my bank? Like, my insurance company doesn't tell me what they're doing with my assets. They just assume they're going to pay my claim.
Okay, so right there. That's me talking because I'm playing my own clip from my own radio show. But he goes on to say that, let's see if this is it.
Think of the unintended consequences of taking a public that has more full faith and confidence in the banking system than maybe people in this room do.
All right. Taking the public who has more faith in the credit of the banking system than the people in this room do. This is people that are in the banking industry, and he's saying, the people out in the real world, they have more confidence in the banking system than you guys do. So we have to be careful what we tell them.
That is exactly what he said. That is verbatim what he said, and that is verbatim what he meant. What he meant was, these people that are assembled here to review the stress tests of all kinds of potential economic scenarios that could occur to our bank. And we know how our bank performed under those tests. And so our confidence is a lot less than the public perception, which is, because of the FDIC, everyone believes that their money would always be guaranteed up to $250,000. And the FDIC themselves understand their inabilities under certain circumstances.
How many banks do you think they could cover? How many big banks do you think they could cover if they fail? Because after that, they've got to, their fund is dry, and they have to go back to Congress with hat in hand asking for more money, right?
I mean, this is really where it gets to understand the comprehension of how big this problem is, Brennan. This is the end of the dollar as we know it, because we owe way too much than what we have in reserves. The amount of deposits from a money multiplication, you know, you're talking about the money multiplier. It's supposed to be a 10x money multiplier. For every dollar deposited, you're supposed to have a reserve of 10 cents at the bank, and 90 cents is supposed to be able to be lent out. But when you consider that a lot of banks use overnight loans to cover their reserve requirements, meaning they don't meet them, then you understand that our money multiplier is not 10x.
In other words, for every dollar they take in, they're loaning out $1,000. Not for every dollar they take in, they loan out 90 cents.
We're very, very, very over-leveraged. We are so over-leveraged.
And again, we don't rehearse this show. You say things, and then I have a clip to back you up. So this is kind of interesting. Here's a clip I played on the TV show the other day. Well, I want you to hear it. This is from a European Parliament member back, I think, in 2013, talking about the Ponzi scheme of the fractional reserve banking. He's out of Europe. Listen to this.
Commissioner, Mr. President, I rise again, I'm afraid, to make the same old hoary speech that I've been making here for several years, and that is, it is my opinion that you do not really understand the concept of banking. All the banks are broke, Bank Santander, Deutsche Bank, Royal Bank of Scotland, they're all broke. And why are they broke? It isn't an act of God. It isn't some sort of tsunami. They're broke because we have a system called fractional reserve banking, which means that banks can lend money that they don't actually have. It's a criminal scandal, and it's been going on for too long. To add to that problem, you have moral hazard, a very significant moral hazard from the political sphere. And most of the problem starts in politics and central banks, which are part of the same political system. We have counterfeiting, sometimes called quantitative easing, but counterfeiting by any other name. The artificial printing of money, which if any ordinary person did, they'd go to prison for a very long time. And yet governments and central banks do it all the time. Central banks repress the amount of interest that rates are, so we don't have the real cost of money. And yet we blame the real retail banks for manipulating LIBOR. The sheer effrontery of this is quite astonishing. It's central banks. It's central banks that manipulate interest rates, Commissioner. And plus, underneath all this, we talk loosely, in a rather cavalier fashion, do we not, about deposit guarantees. So when banks go broke through their own incompetence and chicanery, the taxpayer picks up the tab. It's theft from the taxpayer. And until we start sending bankers, and I include central bankers and politicians, to prison for this outrage, it will continue.
Wow. Gordon, or Godfrey Bloom over there in Europe. You know, I had the chance on Friday to go to the home of the 7th President of the United States, Andrew Jackson, when I was, you know, I'm based in the Mid-South in Tennessee, but I went on over to Nashville to speak at an event. And then had the opportunity to hang around and broadcast and be interviewed by a couple of outlets. And I said, no, thank you. And I slipped out the back door with my family. We went to the Hermitage because I really wanted to get over there. And so I've been a big fan of Andrew Jackson for years. He was censured for doing away with the central bank of the United States and warned us to never do this again. On radio today and TV at 1 o'clock Central, I started part one. Tomorrow will be part two. I've been going through his March 4th, 1837 farewell address. It'll blow your mind. It'll blow your mind. Now, I quote from it in one of my books in 2008, but there's so much here. And he says the same thing, that these banks are going to create this paper money. We should have, by Constitution, gold and silver. Congress should be overseeing this. But instead, we're going to create a central bank, as you guys did. And then, of course, he did away with it, but they still had the paper money system. And he's saying we should go back to gold and silver so that we don't have a fiat paper money system that can be expanded or contracted and have a very dangerous impact on people, because people are only interested in growing the size of government beyond its constitutional bounds and enriching themselves and empowering themselves and buying favors. And then he goes into the counterfeiting problem, and he's saying we have to get back to gold and silver as our medium of exchange. I mean, there's a guy in Europe, Godfrey Bloom, saying, you know, a lot of the same things, warning about the dangers of these central banks and money that is just created. You know, I don't know if you agree with me, but, you know, money traditionally has value because it is work to acquire it. And gold and silver takes work to pull out of the ground. It takes work, it takes capital, it takes investment to pull it out of the ground. It's rare, it's intrinsic, it can't be duplicated, and it has value, and it's a universal standard. I mean, and yet what we do today is not create money based on work, but by printing the printing presses or just creating digits. What do you say to that?
Yes, that was a lot. So let me just take that in two bites. I would just say to Andrew Jackson that I would reduce that to power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And this is what this is, right? When you hand over your banking system to a non-governmental private banking corporation where that you're borrowing from at an interest rate, you're going to get so much built-in corruption into that system that can print what it needs and buy what it prints itself. I mean, it is robbing Peter to pay Paul. It's quantitative easing. It's all kinds of things. Reverse repos, everything we're talking about. So it is absolute, just at this point, we do not have a true handle on how much money we actually even have in our banking system. There has been multiple audits that have come up with multiple trillions of missing dollars. Money has been absconded from the United States. It's going back to the 80s under the HUD and the Housing and Urban Development Corporation. We know this to be true. We have people that are on the record stating this publicly. So there are problems with the ability to account for the finances of the United States of America. And when we get to some kind of dollar freeze, inability, collapse, and to see what the true value of the dollar is without the ability to have it be the world's reserve currency, we're going to get a true accounting of where all this money is and went. And it's going to be very scary.
Wow. I want to play again. I played this on radio the other day, but I don't think I played it on the primetime show to respond. I found a little documentary on what happened to people who did experience a bail-in. The first one that I'm aware of would be Cyprus back in what year was that? 2013?
I think so.
Right,
not sure.
Listen to what this documentary said about the bail-ins. Watch this.
Incredibly, for the first time in the global financial crisis, bank accounts are being raided. People's savings are being seized. Not a bailout, but a bail-in, with bank customers bearing the burden. You can drive around this rocky island in a day, a predominantly Greek-speaking country on the doorstep of the Middle East, population less than a million. We've come here as Cypriots absorb the shock of what's happened. In the evening, at this souvlaki bar in the capital, Nicosia, we get a sense of the mood.
The financial crisis is making me very sad. Sad because I'm watching people suffer. People that haven't done any mistakes. People have worked hard for years, for their whole lifetime, to save some money. And then overnight, they lose it. This is not fair.
Sofia, drene to exi, paracalo.
Yula Dimitriou is the matriarch of this family business. She's going to have 80,000 euros taken from her savings, about $100,000. Harsh treatment the European powers have demanded nowhere else in return for financial aid.
So about $100,000 in U.S. money gone, all right, out of her account. I mean, she runs a restaurant. I mean, she's obviously not super wealthy. If she was, she wouldn't be standing there running that restaurant. She'd have someone else doing it, and she'd be off, you know, enjoying her life. So the people that are about to be punished and hurt are people that have worked their whole life, as she said, to get something. What are your thoughts on what you just saw?
You know, it's so scary, you know, to think, Brandon, that we could have something like this happen in the United States. I mean, we all have had such confidence, myself included, that, you know, we have had the ability to withstand any economic storm because we are the United States and we did have the Federal Reserve and we were the world's reserve standard. Everyone needed the dollar. Right, we've had so much economic security and economic peace in our country for so many years that it's been a blessing by God, really, to have this much economic peace for so long, because we have not deserved it and we have not treated it right. We have completely absconded our financial responsibilities and we have brought this upon ourselves. And so now we are going to, I'm sorry, I'm getting upset, but it's very important to me. You know, it's our country. And we're going to have to go through some really tough economic times here. And these things could happen in the United States. And people are not understanding that. And they're not preparing for that. You know, if you don't have some actual physical precious metals at home, if you don't have a reserve of food, you know, I could be completely crazy and hope and I pray to God every night this never comes. But if it does come, because it could come, in our country, very soon, everyone needs to be prepared to help themselves and their neighbors as God would want us to, as best we can.
Absolutely. And it is emotional because this is, I mean, it'll be like something our country has never, ever seen. And I think what it's going to shock people is how fast it will unfold. We look at COVID and how fast that unfolded. I mean, we went from being free people to you had to mask up, to you couldn't go to church, your business was shut down, the schools were shut down. I mean, we transformed in a matter of days into something we've never seen before, and we haven't recovered.
That's right.
I don't know what part of the country you live in, but I'm in the Mid-South here. Here in the Mid-South, has traditionally been a very friendly, warm, gracious Southern culture, right? The whole nation has changed, including the Mid-South. People are not as friendly as they once were. They seem scared of each other. They seem stressed. They seem short. They're not as friendly. Some are still friendly, but out in the general public, in the grocery stores, in the marketplaces, where people who didn't know each other still would chit-chat in line and be very friendly, there is a tension and there is a new attitude that was not there prior to COVID, from being scared to approach people because some are masked, some are not, the controversy over who's got a shot, who doesn't have a shot, the controversy and division over politics. We have become such a divided nation, and now people just think it's easier to just keep your mouth shut for fear you say the wrong thing to the wrong person and you end up in a controversy. So can you imagine how our fabric of our society could be changed with what is yet to come? Again, I've played it so many times, but it bears playing again. I don't know if you've seen it. I'm sure you have, but I'd love to play, get your comments before we let you go. And that is from back in 2008, Representative Paul Konjorski, a Democrat from Pennsylvania, on bailouts. Now, this is when they did do the bailouts. Now they're saying, sorry, I'm not doing that anymore. It's going to be bail-ins. Look at how fast he says the whole American and global system was about to collapse. And tell me if you don't think this is how quickly it could unfold again. Watch this.
Extent. Why did we do that? We did that because the secretary. Look, I was there when the secretary and the chairman of the Federal Reserve came those days and talked with members of Congress about what was going on. It was about September 15th. Here's the facts, and we don't even talk about these things. On Thursday at about 11 o'clock in the morning, the Federal Reserve noticed a tremendous drawdown of money market accounts in the United States to the tune of $550 billion. Was being drawn out in a matter of an hour or two. The Treasury opened up its window to help. They pumped $105 billion in the system and quickly realized that they could not stem the tide. We were having an electronic run on the banks. They decided to close the operation, close down the money accounts, and announce a guarantee of $250,000 per account so there wouldn't be further panic out there. And that's what actually happened. If they had not done that, their estimation was that by 2 o'clock that afternoon, $5.5 trillion would have been drawn out of the money market system of the United States, would have collapsed the entire economy of the United States, and within 24 hours, the world economy would have collapsed.
Within 24 hours, the world economy would have collapsed. What do you think about what he's saying there?
Well, I think it's even faster now, right? Because that literally happened in 2001, what is why he's talking about 9/11, right? He's talking about how fast people started to drain their accounts after they realized.
Oh, that was 2001. Okay, I'm sorry about that.
Unless I'm wrong, Brennan, tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure he's talking about 9/11 and the monies that was being withdrawn immediately because everyone thought we were under attack.
Right.
So let's clarify that date that he was talking about, but that's what I was under the impression that we were talking about 9/11.
I thought it was 2008, but I'll double check. The description in the website says fall of 2008, but I don't know if that, again, I can double check though.
So that's even scarier, okay? Because at least with 9/11, when I thought that he was specifically talking about the withdrawals that happened that began after that, it made sense because we actually had an actual cathartic event that everyone in the world knew about at the same time. With 2008, it actually was several months of a long thing and process, you know, for Lehman Brothers and Merrill Lynch and all kinds of actual credit default swaps to start to actually break with the bonds that were breaking. So it's actually interesting that it would go that fast. And so we would have to get the date on that. It must have been the announcement of bankruptcy of Bear Stearns or Lehman Brothers. It had to be a date where something actually was publicly announced. And if you get a public announcement like that, then you start to believe, oh my gosh, the system's going to collapse. And it could, you could see that that would just be, like he said, an electronic bank run, because you thought the system was going to collapse when you started to hear the public bankruptcy of Lehman Brothers being announced, Bear Stearns, et cetera.
Here's an article I just found. I got to pay to get it, but it was linked. As credit crisis spiraled, alarm led to action. This is dated 2008, and it's about this whole process. In fact, on YouTube, they include a link to that article and are talking about, you know, when this happens. And it does appear to be 2008. One or two other things here. New York Stock Exchange halts trading on numerous stocks due to technical issues. An article on the street. That happened today. Hit by some glitch. Interesting. Mm-hmm. We had the FAA the other day. All the clowns grounded. Supposedly, one report I read was a line of code had got deleted. And, and I'm like, wait a minute. You don't write and delete code in a live environment. That's done in a beta testing environment. You're not putting lives of the people in the air because you're fooling around with the actual software running.
It's not funny. I'm not laughing, but yes, I'm with you.
But to think they could sell that to us, right?
Exactly.
That we could be so dumb as to believe that. Others are saying that there may have been a big purchase of Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, for the government to pay off hackers or something. Who knows? I don't know what went on. There's a lot of things flying around. But I find it interesting that we have also then Bank of America, that we have the reports by people having money taken out of their Bank of America accounts. And then you add to it the FAA. Then you add to it the New York Stock Exchange. Then you add to it a few months ago attacks on our power substations in the Northeast and then on the West Coast. It seems as though either the power elite are testing how people are going to respond, or outside forces are testing. And I don't know if we're talking about Russia, Iran, because I have friends that are former special forces. And I talked to one not too long ago that was special forces for the CIA. He was involved in going in. He carried a gun for the CIA, which is not common. Most of those guys are sitting at a desk as analysts, you know. And so I've talked to enough of these special forces guys who have told me that one of the first things you do into a country is you go in there and you attack their infrastructure. And what are you doing when you fool around with our stock exchange, our FAA, our power supply, our banking? You're fooling around with our critical infrastructure. Now, I don't know who's doing it. I don't know why it's being done, but I don't think this is all being done coincidentally. It just happens to be a coincidence that all these things are happening in the last several weeks. What say you?
Well, I think that, you know, it's very suspicious now, and the World Economic Forum, and I keep bringing them up because they're definitely a massive instigator of a promulgator of a lot of these economic philosophies that lead into government, NGO, public private partnership strategies that all of these lobbyists write for every level of government at the local level at, you know, so the school boards, and when they accepted COVID money, accepted all kinds of conditions about mask wearing 6 feet apart, you'll comply with all of our PEP requirements, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that people had to go after their bonds to sue the school boards to just get a parental voice back because of all of the beholdenness that the school boards had for the COVID money. So that's a tangent I just went off on. But what I'm trying to basically come back to, Brandon, is that we are in a different time. We have been morphed, like you said, into a totally different world post-COVID 2 years later. And people would never accept that anything massive happened immediately after the World Economic Forum just again said this is the most critical thing that could possibly happen in the next 2 years, unless they started to see it potentially happen ahead of time. You know, you have to potentially see things happening. So you saw that the FAA went down for a day, and you remember that. You heard that somebody at Bank of America had some money taken. You heard that. You heard that somebody didn't have power at Christmas and couldn't charge their electric vehicle. You heard that. So that when these things actually start to happen, or something happens cataclysmically, it doesn't seem like some, you know, governing body that controls central bankers actually planned it to happen just 2 years after coronavirus, when they said all tech, you know, that will be known as the time frame. And I'm speaking of Yuval Noah Harari specifically. He specifically said that 2020 will be the year that Americans agree to accept surveillance that goes under their skin by accepting vaccines and other things. So this was all a coordinated thing that they can't have seem coordinated. So how do you have this cataclysmic thing happen so soon now, to time it with the collapse of the American banking system that is happening organically because we have just absolutely absconded our fiscal responsibility to ourselves and our former and our next generations down for 3-4 generations? We've completely messed this whole thing up, so that our system is going to collapse as the Roman system collapsed upon themselves. This is going to happen at some point. We've just been holding up this house of cards and waiting for something to blow on it, so that when that thing does come and blow it up, it doesn't seem like it was coordinated to all happen succinctly in the last, you know, 48 months.
Absolutely. Well said. People are being conditioned. They're being conditioned. And, you know, you make something a very interesting comment, that all of this is happening at a time when our banks are already having some serious liquidity problems. I began warning my radio audience in December of 2019 that I was watching those repo markets, those repurchasing markets overnight. And yes, in December of 2019, I said, you know, I'm worried about these banks and the liquidity problems and the derivatives and the banks collapsing. And I'm concerned that, you know, when I see these things, well, then what happened? COVID happened, and then all this money got printed, and all of a sudden it seemed to put a stop to all that, because all of this money got printed like crazy, trillions of dollars, as we know, right? So here we are now, from December of 2019 to now 2023, now we need another juice. We need more juice, or maybe we're at the end of the line. So there has to be some big event that is used to cover the collapse of the banks, to cover the central banks, to cover the bankers, and to cover the politicians who are dancing on the strings as the puppets of the bankers, as, well, Andrew Jackson and many others warned us would happen. So you need some big event, kind of like a Pearl Harbor event that got us into the war. Now we need some kind of digital Pearl Harbor event, and people will go, oh, wow, well, that's not the fault of my politician. That's not the fault of my big bank, my greedy big bank. That's not the fault of the central bankers. You know, yeah, we were attacked, you know. So they got to have some reason to sell the narrative. Is that what you're saying?
Well, and this is exactly how, Brennan, how the public-private partnership works together and congruence together, right? Because, you know, obviously, if you want to create global government, you have to have some kind of global war. Any time in the past we've ever had any kind of economic turmoil, if you'll notice, we've immediately had some kind of war either before or right after. Because war, you know, basically can be this resolution to a stock market collapse. It gets all of the military stocks, all of the energy stocks. It gets, I mean, war is good for the stock market. Do not kid yourself. So, you know, they solve and have used war for many years for many economic ways to shift money all around the globe. Well, we have a war here between this country and that country, and we can get all of these resources with all of our public-private partnerships with all these private defense corporations and all of these things. These all things work in tandem to move money and get things where they're needed so that things can go the way they want them to.
Oh, but I want to show you two more things. Show you this is a headline right here from a website I like to read. Central banks turn to gold as losses mount, and they're just stocking up on levels not seen since 1967. So they know something is coming. Number two, I was walking through the room yesterday when one of our folks was talking to one of our people that watches the show, and they were on speaker. And so as I was walking through the room, I heard this lady say, I need someone I can talk to that is a financial planner that understands what's happening. And my financial planner that I was talking to thinks I'm crazy. Who can I talk to? And the woman was almost crying. And I stopped and I said to my daughter, I said, tell her to go to Rebecca's website. Tell her to go to walzerwealth.com, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So I said, go to her website, tell her to go to her website, that she understands these issues, and so hopefully she called you. But if people want to talk to a financial planner, you're not the traditional financial planner that says, oh, the stock market has a historically long track record of success, just sit in there and wait. Well, that's great if you're 20, but what if you're 60 or 65 or 70 and you don't have time for the stock market to come back 25, 30 years from now? So you're part of your deals, what you do is help people get into a financial position where maybe their traditional financial planners mock them for listening to guys like me, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's true. It's a lot of people can be, you know, internet, YouTube stars and understand everything about finances because they watch a show. So, you know, it's very important to get professional advice, but, you know, get the professional advice that you're comfortable with. Our firm is very conservative. Like, we absolutely believe that right now is the best time to have a healthy, precious metals in physical format at home, locked up in a safe in a secure location. Like, it's just a really good time. You know, there's been one asset class, just one, over the 6,000 years of history that I understand man to have, that has gotten us from one system, economic system, to the next economic system. And that asset class will get us from, I call it a bridge asset, meaning it will take us from where we are. It'll be the bridge over to where we're going. And I believe the gold will actually still be used in the new system, because I believe what we're moving back to is not a digital currency, is not a central bank digital currency. That is going to fail. That is going to come at another time. But I believe what we're moving back to is a gold-backed currency system again, gold-backed, precious metals-backed, and rare earth minerals-backed. Because this is what BRICS nations are promulgating, and they will force our hands.
Yeah, there you go. Because they're doing it, we'll have to say, oh, because people aren't going to buy this fiat currency anymore. So if the BRICS and particularly China and Russia are stocking up on massive gold to back their system with gold, America and others will have to join in suit.
America and Europe will have to. They will have won, and we will have lost the fiat war, and we will have to go to backed assets again. And that's what we need anyways, Brennan, because we can never let this happen again, where we allow politicians to give away our future, tax our way all the way down to our fifth generation children down, just to cover what we've already done, not to cover what they keep doing year after year after year, as if there's no price, there's no consequence, there's no tax they won't levy, there's no account they won't take. If they know that the system is about to collapse.
Oh, and they'll take your 401k and give you a paper IOU. They've already held congressional hearings on that.
Of course. Everything will be on the table. Okay. Everything.
So people just contact you through walzerwealth.com.
Absolutely. But, you know, absolutely get professional management. But also, if you don't and you don't want to seek it at this time, definitely do yourself a favor and get some actual physical metals. Not suggesting that you buy nothing but metals. I have no personal suggestions going on here. This is not actual individual financial advice. This is just general financial advice relating to if we go through a chaotic time, which I see that coming. Don't forget, gold is a metal of exchange, so you can exchange it for goods and services, but it is also a reserve of value. And so it is an investment that is with you that will intrinsically be worth something always in every system. And that's what I believe the Bible to say very clearly. So I would be with silver and gold, and the other things would be ancillary to me.
Excellent. As always, thank you, Rebecca. Great broadcast. Thank you so much for your time.
You.
Thank you. WalzerWealth.com, WalzerWealth.com. And folks, as you just heard, we're talking about gold and silver. You know, we've had Swiss America as a sponsor for 17 years. 17 years. Their founder and CEO, dear, dear friend of mine. And their CEO today is a dear friend of mine. And if you want that free packet of information, you can call Wes Peters. I met her through Wes Peters. Just text Wes. You can call him, but just text him and tell him you want that free packet of information on precious metals. Here's his number. Put it up there if you would, guys. 602-558-8585. Just text him. Say, hey, Wes, I want the free packet of information on precious metals, how to put gold in my IRA. Just text Wes. He'll send that packet out to you right away. Just text him at that number, 602-558-8585. 602-558-8585. Just text him and he'll send it to you. And again, what are you waiting on? Because, folks, I've been doing this since 1993 after reading Larry Burkett. So, again, I don't know what you're waiting on and why you haven't already done it. 602-558-8585. I don't give financial advice. I give financial opinion. But you can certainly understand where my opinion is coming from. You need to do your own homework and due diligence. And it starts with getting that free packet of information from Wes Peters. Just text him your name and address. He'll send it on 602, whether we're talking gold, silver, bullion, numismatic, 1933 and older, which provides privacy. 1933 and older is a collectible, and it has value as spot price, but also as a rare collectible. So it can have value increased two ways, the spot price and the collectability or antique price. That's known as numismatic. They can teach you how to have a diversified portfolio, as well as putting gold in your IRA. Talking to you about, you know, do you trust the government not to seize your 401k? Are you at the right age to just go ahead and cash out, pay your taxes, and then diversify? These are decisions you're going to have to make on your own, because there's no template for every person, right? Everybody's in a different situation. But you do need to start with that packet of information, 602-558-8585, 602-558-8585. And then you heard her mention having food on hand. Again, folks, we're not promoting anything we haven't done. Started purchasing gold and silver in 1993. I bought a large sum of freeze-dried food for my family in 2013. We didn't become distributors of freeze-dried food till 2016. When so many people are asking us, how do you get it? Where do you get it? Where do we buy it? We said, you know what? If that's the case, let's just offer it to our audience as a service at a fair price, take a reasonable profit margin, and use it to fund and grow our broadcast network. And I'm telling you, it has. And so we need your help. And yet you can also help yourself. Take a look at this screen right here. Again, I wouldn't be delaying. I'm telling you what's going to happen now. People are going to wish they'd done it, and it's going to be too late. Whether we're talking financial preparation, gold and silver, or food. So I wouldn't be fooling around. All those warning signs, I think, are there. If you want to get storable freeze-dried food with a 25-year shelf life, here's how you can do it. Go to WVWTVstore.com, WVWTVstore.com. We have the Ready Hour Ultimate Breakfast, Ready Hour Mega Protein, Ready Hour Fruit and Veggie, gluten-free, 1 year, 4 week. 3 months, 6 months, 72-hour test kit if you want to try it. If you want to order over the phone, you can actually talk to a live human being who will track the order all the way to your door. Then you can call and Libby will help you. 901-468-9357, 901-468-9357. You can call her even now, 901-468-9357. Otherwise, text or leave a message because her phone rings off the hook. You can also text or leave a message. Leave your name and number clearly. She'll get back to you very promptly. 901-468-9357. We also did add this week under emergency supplies. If we go back to the website, under emergency supplies right there, just click emergency supplies. That will open up a whole page. We are now distributors for Alexa Pure, the Pro Water Filtration System. 200 gallons you can purify with the replacement filter that comes with it, and then after 200 gallons, you can get a new filter. But this, again, if you have an issue with electricity, cyber attacking, bringing down the water in the pumps, you're going to have to find a source of water, and you're going to probably want to have to purify it, right? So that you have the water, so you then have the stove, the little stove that you can use and take kindling. Then you have the pot you put on top of the stove so you can boil the water so you can make the freeze-dried food. So we have kind of put everything together for you that we can over on our site so you can have preparedness. Again, this is nothing that we haven't done, and we're doing this before we were distributors of such products. So again, we have a lot of people coming to us wanting us to promote this, promote that. We don't promote someone else's stuff or even the stuff that we ourselves keep in our warehouse and ship out unless it's something we do and we believe in, okay? And I think that's pretty evident with the way we've been acting and conducting our business over the many years. WVWTVstore.com, WVWTVstore.com. www.thepublicsite.com.